Yeah, we got it. Here we go. You write to us, everybody. Step right up. Write to us at mynorthwest.com. You can text as well. Come on in through the State Roofing text line at 98973. Tom's back from his, what do we call that? Is it a mini vacation? How long were you gone for?
I was gone for a week.
How many books did you read? How many books did you read in 1 week?
Three. So, you know, not that many.
Oh, my God. Big books or booklets? Like big books? Like heavy books?
Well, one, to be fair, one was an Agatha Christie mystery. So those are like 200 pages, but they read like, you know, it's like cotton candy. You just whip right through them and stuff. And then I read a book on Shakespeare.
Okay.
And the,
now, did you just find these books that's in the big library there, and you go like, oh, look at this, and you take it off the shelf? And
okay, the Shakespeare book I brought with me because I bought tons of books. But the Agatha Christie, I determined I was going to read whatever available mysteries were there, and so I would just take whatever was off the shelf there.
Yeah, okay, good for you. God, you know, I can tell you something. I'm a horrible reader, but I am jealous of your week.
Well, you know, John, and I know, but the thing is, you act like you're not a reader, and maybe literally you're not, but by listening to audiobooks, that's as good to me as reading. And so you could bring your little tape recorder or whatever you play your audiobooks in the Shakespeare room,
can listen to audiobooks. No, I would read, but I'm just saying reading for pleasure, it is painful and is slow. But I see people sit in comfy chairs with books, and they read, and they sip their tea or their wine, and they adjust their glasses, and it's like it looks so just absolutely intoxicatingly, just like at a whole another world. But when you're wrestling with words that are flying around in your head, and a K is upside down, and it looks like a P, and you're like, ah!
Yeah.
But I see you people, and I just admire your ability to read.
You know, you would love this place then, John, because up on the third or fourth floor, depending on whether you count the basement as a floor or not, they have a library. So you come out of your literary room, and then you have these windows out in the ocean.
What's the name
and
of
they
this place, offer Tom? You free... People want to go there. What's the name
it's,
of it?
It's called Sylvia Beach Hotel.
Okay.
Sylvia Beach was the woman who, living in France, although she was an American, published Ulysses for the first time in France because it was not allowed to be published here.
Uh-huh.
And the great thing is, so Sylvia Beach is like a famous...
Okay, we're losing them, Tom. We're losing them.
But the great thing is, but it's right on the beach. See, so it's Sylvia Beach. So it's a play on the words. Very literary.
Okay.
But upstairs, John, you can have... they give you free mulled wine. So you can have tea or mulled wine and sit in your, you know, in the library and look out on the ocean and read or pretend to read. You can sleep there. Just soak up the atmosphere. Okay.
All right. So Trump nominates Amy Coney Barrett. Why do we have to do her middle name? Anyway, she is, here's the president.
I stand before you today to fulfill one of my highest and most important duties under the United States Constitution, the nomination of a Supreme Court Justice. Today it is my honor to nominate one of our nation's most brilliant and gifted legal minds to the Supreme Court.
So true, so true.
She is a woman of unparalleled achievement, towering intellect, sterling credentials, and unyielding loyalty to the Constitution, Judge Amy Coney Barrett.
The notorious ACB, she's known as. All right, so the president does it, and then he talks to the Barrett family.
For the last 3 years, Judge Barrett has served with immense distinction on the federal bench. Her family is a core part of who Amy is. She opened her home and her heart and adopted two beautiful children from Haiti. Her incredible bond with her youngest child, a son with Down syndrome, is a true inspiration. If confirmed, Justice Barrett will make history as the first mother of school-age children ever to serve on the U.S. Supreme Court.
She's what, 48? 47, 48?
Yes.
Yeah. Trump doesn't expect much controversy. Oh, really? Okay, well, let's see.
This should be a straightforward and prompt confirmation. I'm sure it'll be extremely non-controversial. We said that the last time, didn't we?
All right. A little humor there, a little irony. Okay. She took the moment to speak to the American people. Let's listen to the judge.
The president has asked me to become the ninth justice And as it happens, I'm used to being in a group of nine, my family. But this evening, I also want to acknowledge you, my fellow Americans. If confirmed, I would not assume that role for the sake of those in my own circle, and certainly not for my own sake. I would assume this role to serve you. I would discharge the judicial oath, which requires me to administer justice without respect to persons, do equal right to the poor and rich, and faithfully and impartially discharge my duties under the United States Constitution.
Okay, so she's going to basically bring up the fact that if somebody tries to ask her about what she thinks about something, she'll pull the Ginsburg line, which is the Ginsburg rule of, look, I'm not going to comment on it, what I feel about it, I can't talk about it because if I have a case that comes up before me, I don't want to prejudice that, or I just, my own personal opinion is not that important. What I do is I interpret it by the law, the Constitution, and that's it. So she said that before. A lot of the questions were asked to her in 2017 when she was appointed there, the seventh court. She was that up in Chicago. So she got a chance, I think. When will they finally start to talk to her, Tom? Do we know when that's going to begin?
October 12th.
Okay. All right.
And they expect a vote, maybe just a few days before the election, but mm-hmm. before the election.
Okay.
So, you know, I always depend on you, John, uh-oh. For a proper perspective and context and all. And I could swear on Friday when we got this news at 4:30, we broke it and we handled it, you know, mm-hmm. talked about it two or yep. three times mm-hmm. over the next 90 minutes, that you were assuring me, despite my reservations about the integrity of Mitch McConnell.
I didn't think he would move anyone forward.
Yes, I know. It's amazing. Remember, and I was chastised by the letter writers, the listeners, saying, oh, Tom, this is exactly what's going to happen. And they walked through and said, no, he'll wait until after the election because that would go against the Mitch McConnell rule in effect and all this. And son of a gun, if I come back a week later and not only have they named it, they've already figured out a time. So anyway, I just thought... I was amused over the course of my vacation.
I was completely wrong. That's a nice way of saying that. I would say this, that it's the latest polling shows that it's having no effect upon voters.
Yes.
That a lot of people are not like, it's not going to move me one way or the other. The only thing, I saw this interesting. They said the only thing that this where it could hurt the Democrats is that if they go after her personally, the way they did Kavanaugh, and if they start ripping into her and saying horrible things about her as a mother. Here's the Twitter. This came from, who's this woman? This Ibrahim X Kande, whatever his name is, how to be an anti-racist. Here's what he writes. Some white colonists adopted black children. They civilized these savages, children in the superior ways of white people, while using them as props in their lifelong picture of denial, while cutting the biological parents out of these kids and out of their picture of humanity. So if you get that kind of stuff from the left, it will help motivate, because they got to get the white college-educated suburban moms to go and start to think, well, I don't like the way they're treating that woman. That will possibly get someone maybe to come over and vote for Trump. But as it is right now, they don't think this is a game changer to move in one way or the other.
Okay, so first, in terms of polls, polling shows something like almost 70% of people think that Trump should have waited, that we should wait for the election for this. But obviously, it's a political power play, so that's not going to happen. Then the second thing is, the question is, who will this engage more? Mm-hmm. Will it remind evangelicals or some social conservatives who are not really happy with Trump's whole presentation of himself and the way, will they say, well, you know, will it be a reminder? Okay, so he may be an awful vessel, but he is somehow doing the Lord's will by getting the court filled, and so maybe I'll risk another 4 years. So that's one way to motivate. That was one way to motivate people on the right. And the way to motivate people on the left, there still is some question about how many Bernie bros, how many, you know, of the most progressive Democrats are going to vote for Biden because they feel like he's just not far enough along their political persuasion. Mm-hmm. This might, because she's now seen as a serious risk. I mean, the assumption, I think, is that Roe v. Wade will be overturned.
No.
If she gets on.
No.
If that's the case, that could be a concern enough for the liberals, the progressives, to join the liberals and, you know, make sure they vote for Biden. So it can go right now. You're right. Nobody knows if it's going to impact people. Right now, they say only between 2-4% of the populace hasn't, you know, made up their mind once and for all. Mm-hmm. But thing is, elections can come down to 2 to 4%. So it could still sway things, but only on the margins.
Let's say this happens. I mean, this is like a scene from House of Cards. He puts her in there, she gets in, and then the Dems take over control of the Senate. They throw the filibuster out, and then they decide to pack the court. So, okay, you're going to go 6-3? Fine. You know what we're going to do? We're going to throw three more in, throw four more in, and we're going to get all liberals in there. Joe won't show who's on his list because people would tear it apart. So we're going to get a buff in there, then we'll swing it around the other way, and since you're getting rid of the filibuster, we're going to throw 15 in there, whatever it is, because nothing in the Constitution says how big the Supreme Court has to be, right? They've been, I think they've been nine for, I don't know, since 1872 or something like that. Yeah. So, in this case, fine. The Democrats take the, because there's a bunch of seats that are up in the Senate. Mm-hmm. They could easily flip this thing around. So you think, maybe will that motivate? Will that scare people and that motivate people to keep some senators in there in place to allow the Republicans to stay in control of the Senate? So who knows? There's a lot at play, but it'll be interesting to see how they go about questioning her without blasting away at her personal life as being a mom. And then, you know, are these children like this guy, this famous individual? He's a best-selling author. He writes for the New York Times. Adopting black children, right, just to be able to use them as props.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think
I wanted you to use the other kid that's got Down syndrome. Was that kid used as a prop too?
I don't know enough about her to know if
Let's just assume, Tom. She's using kids as props?
I don't know. I don't know enough about her to know if she is or not. I wouldn't put it past Mitch McConnell, but to her, she sounds like a perfectly fine human being. I may disagree with her mental processes, but she seems legitimate. And by the way, I saw on Fox News there was a debate between Kenneth Starr and Lawrence Tribe.
Yeah.
Kenneth Starr obviously is the Clinton investigator, so he's on the right. Lawrence Tribe is a constitutional lawyer, I think from Harvard or Yale, on the left. And Lawrence Tribe says, as far as he knows of her, she's a fine nominee. He doesn't have a problem with the nominee. It's the nomination. It's the process. And I think that's a smart distinction.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's going to go after her, you know, her mental acuity. I think what they're going to do is they're going to ask her about how she justifies some of these stances she's taken in the past.
Mm-hmm. She is already. The case. Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is that she has weighed in on issues that will be before her coming up. And so that's going to be kind of a tricky dance for her. But I don't think there's any question. You've only got two Republicans who came right out and says, this doesn't feel right. This is not proper. We shouldn't be taking a vote. Mm-hmm. But when Mitt Romney said, I'm good with it, because he's a good social conservative. Yep. The assumption is, and I don't think anything is going to, the assumption is it'll be pretty much a straight party vote.
Right.
Unless
the Dems try a whole bunch of things where you can do a 2-hour thing and then not recess and then consent and non-consent to motion.
Well,
and
they
then
could slow
there's
it down
a whole bunch of different
a
things.
A day
you can do. Yeah.
Or two, but Ooh. Not enough to stop the election.
I've seen that there's many tricks that they can pull. All right. The fact that Cuomo does a piece to find out whether or not the tents that are around, the graffiti that's all over the place, the garbage, the shooting, the violence, the breaking of windows, the setting of fires. Are people coming here to enjoy that?
Seattle is known for a lot of things. The rain, it's coffee, the Space Needle.
Seattle is such an inviting destination.
But Seattle has been in the news a lot lately. COVID-19 and business closures, wildfire smoke, and endless protests.
We're obviously experiencing so much right now, all converging at the same time.
Seattle's reputation is suffering. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Cuomo travel expert Steve Danishuk explains.
Nationwide, we're getting a bad reputation. We get tainted every time they talk about, you know, New York, Portland, and then they throw in Seattle, and it's just not helpful.
Seattle's.
By the way, Jason Rantz appearing on Tucker Carlson's not helping the matter, I might add.
Already facing its share of challenges with closures due to COVID-19 restrictions and then growing crime.
People are saying there's nothing left in downtown. Even the councilman we were recently talking to is disturbed about the disintegration of downtown. Over 100 stores closed. Columbia Sports were closed, but at Macy's.
Groups like Visit Seattle say they plan on launching an $8 million campaign next month to draw local and regional visitors.
We need to get people back into the city, helping those businesses, keeping those restaurants open that we all love. We all play a role in rebuilding Seattle.
The Seattle Hotel Association and Seattle Restaurant Alliance says this. The Emerald City continues to be the jewel of the Northwest, with some of the best and most critically acclaimed restaurants in the nation, beautiful and spacious hotels, and incredible hospitality staff.
I was downtown Saturday. It's weird. It is so weird down there. Pioneer Square, just completely empty, except for the tents and the derelicts and the homeless people.
I know,
and the shooting and the drugs and all
that. But isn't that true of a lot of downtown cities? Because COVID has shut everything down. I'm surprised that we're spending money trying to convince people to tourists, you know, local tourists, to even bother going downtown just because there's so many businesses that are closed. And, you know, the riots, the protests probably aren't helping much, but they're mostly up on Capitol Hill. The downtown area is a ghost town because of COVID. And I'm not sure, do we want $8 million worth of tourists in the downtown area? I don't know. I just find this whole story kind of puzzling.
Well, I think if you're probably sitting there and your stores are empty and you pay this money.
But are
money
your stores even open?
Well, there's a lot of them down there. They're all boarded up. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know how much of it is what is COVID related and what is the dirt, the garbage, and the fear and just generally not wanting to be down there. And then it's the it's the catch 22 that you're not open.
Yes. Right. Yeah, that's the ultimate. I mean, it's just like, I love New York City. I wouldn't go to New York City, not because I think there are protests occasionally. It's because most of the things I want to see are shut down.
Well, they're all boarded up. I mean, they smashed all those windows all along Fifth Avenue. I mean, those big stores
big
are just
downtown.
Completely wiped out, right?
No, anyway, I know, but
you
want to
go
no
for the
customers.
Shopping and the window shopping in New York City. You can't buy anything, but you can look. They're all boarded up because of 400 years of oppression. Let's take a look at traffic. Buckashoot, it is a bet, and you're going to win on it, that you're going to have a great time every time you go to Muckleshoot Casino. Absolutely. Bet it all that you're going to have a great time. I mean, you know, gamble within reason, but it's a sure bet that you're going to have a good time. Rachel Bell, on the other hand, got about 50-50. You're going to have to double down split those sevens and...
Wow, you're giving me a verbal noogie.
I hope them bartending.
You're just teasing me, aren't you?
By the way, I feel a huge relief to not have to read. As much as I love Cairo 7, our news partner, it's back in Tom's hands to read those little...
I felt like I was listening to a bedtime story today.
From Tom?
I like that one, yeah. I want to be in front of a fire on a bearskin rug. Do you think we could get Barry White to do it instead of Tom?
Yes, we'll ask Barry White.
Or Samuel L. Jackson should do it.
Hey, how about this John Walters that you got a chance to talk to? The crazy.
What'd you say his name is?
Walters.
Okay. I thought you said Walters. John Waters.
Fine. Well, that's if you're not from Philadelphia.
What is?
Go ahead.
That's okay. I'll go ahead.
How is he? As an interview?
Oh, he's so good. Yeah. You'll hear. I mean, he is succinct and he knows how to answer a question. Mm-hmm. And I'll let it speak for itself.
Yeah.
I don't have to paint this board picture. So filmmaker John Waters is the latest guest on my podcast, Your Last Meal. If you're unfamiliar, you probably know who he is. He is behind the movies Hairspray, Pink Flamingos, Crybaby. He has had the same pencil-thin mustache just above his lip for the past 40 years. And his latest book is called Mr. Know-It-All, The Tarnished Wisdom of a Filth Elder. Hmm. He's 73 and he wants to identify as a filth elder now. Here's a little excerpt that he reads from his new book.
Somehow I became respectable. I don't know how. The last film I directed got some terrible reviews and was rated NC-17. Six people in my personal phone book have been sentenced to life in prison. I used to be despised, but now I'm asked to give commencement addresses at prestigious colleges. Suddenly, the worst thing that has happened to a creative person has happened to me. I am accepted.
So I asked him how he feels about going from America's biggest weirdo and people wouldn't even play his movies on TV to being kind of mainstream, and he says that he loves it.
Of course I like it. Yes, it leads to first-class airline tickets, which is the best thing that can ever happen to you. Even since I wrote the book, even more ludicrous things. I was in the Nike ad this year. I've never caught a ball in my life. So I've stayed the same, and society has just come a little closer to me.
Yeah. John is very quirky, as you can imagine. He has a lot of daily rituals and routines that he likes to stick to. So every day he writes down how many days it's been since he last smoked a cigarette.
Hold on. I've not had a cigarette in 6,433 days. I write it down every day on my file card that I carry in my pocket. It's the only thing I regret in my life, smoking. And at the end, I smoke 5 packs of King Cools a day. I smoke swimming. I couldn't have sex. I had to smoke. I smoked in the shower.
When you quit, did you find that you had to replace the addiction with something else?
Yes. I became an alcoholic for 3 days. That was not a good solution.
So John is also a very disciplined eater. He is very concerned with maintaining his exact weight. He weighs himself every Friday. So he eats healthfully during the week. And then on the weekends, he splurges. And one of his favorite indulgences is a coconut cream pie.
But what I can't figure out is, after I have 2 pieces of pie, how long does that take to end up a pound on my body? That's what I can't figure out. Like, if I'm going to weigh myself every Friday morning, I try not to eat a piece of pie Thursday night. But I don't know if that ends up that quickly in your weight total that morning. That's what I have never been able to figure out.
Okay, so if you go online and you look this up, it sounds so simple. They say, well, if you eat 3,500 calories, that equals 1 pound of fat. It's like, oh, okay. But I interviewed the Seattle dietitian, Mia Kwan, and she said that is not true at all. And it basically depends on every single person, and there's no satisfying pat answer because 70% of your weight has to do with your genetics, and then it has to do with hormones, and it has to do with existing conditions and, you know, what you eat when you're not eating the pie. And so she said you can't entirely control your weight as much as you think that you can. But what you can control is not stressing out about food. So if you're somebody who can't enjoy an indulgence because you're so worried you're going to gain weight, you're going to get fat, that can actually lead to more weight gain.
One thing that happens there is your level of stress hormones are going to increase. I'm sure you heard of cortisol. That's one of those stress hormones. And having enormously high amounts of that contributes to something called, you know, kind of chronic inflammation in the body. And that's going to increase our risk for chronic diseases like hypertension, diabetes, and heart disease. And so we want to keep our stress hormones in check. And so when we're creating these added stressors, because we think, you know, we have these food rules, or I think I shouldn't eat this or that, your cortisols are going to be kind of off the charts. And when that happens consistently over time, that can even have an impact on metabolism. When they studied 2 groups of people eating chocolate, and in the one group, they were really able to enjoy the chocolate and didn't have that mentality versus, you know, the other group where they believe that chocolate was so bad and they believe that they were really going to gain a lot of weight from eating chocolate. And guess what? The group that actually believed that the chocolate was going to make them gain weight actually gained weight, while the other group did not.
Remember a couple years ago, you would see these ads of women eating yogurt and laughing, or eating salad and laughing by themselves in their kitchen? That's how you have to eat so you don't gain weight. You have to just take full joy in every bite you put in your mouth.
What happened to John? Where did he go? Did he take any solace in that woman telling him what to do? Did he hear any of that?
Only if he listened to the podcast. I know. I'm worried about him too. Yeah, with his regimented eating. So if you want to hear the whole podcast, just text the word John, J-O-H-N. Hey, that's your name too.
I know.
To 98973. We'll text you the episode, or it's everywhere you get podcasts. But you could text John to 98973.
Not to give too much away, but I like the final meal that he wants to eat because he's concerned about other people.
Yeah, I don't want to get too much into it because I want people to listen.
I know, just leave it at that.
But it has to do with, his last meal has to do with how he wants his corpse presented when he's dead. It's a very John Waters situation. But I won't tell you what the food is unless you text John to 98973.
There you go. See that?
Is it Waters? Is it Waters? Is it Curly? Is it Curly? How do you say Curly if you're from Philly?
Curly.
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 Coily.
Waters.
Waters.
Water.
I don't like the way my face feels.
I did an event. I know. I did an event on Saturday for Junior Achievement, and there was an anchor from Q13.
Uh-huh.
She was from New Jersey, and she was telling me how, you know, got rid of her New Jersey accent. So I was deliberately trying to get it to come out by talking to her like this on the air, pulling it, trying to pull it out of her. I said, "So quick, say water." She's like,
"Water.
Water. Water. Water."
The rains in Spain fall gently on the water.
On the water. Put some water in your radiator. All right. Are any cars broken down? Huh? Bucky's Auto Service Center. It's your thing out of here, Rachel.
Oh, can I tell you? I saw Bucky in the wild recently.
Okay, Bucky's Auto Service Centers. I'm not even going to look at you.
It was in Tacoma, and it looked so nice.
It's a place you take your car.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
I know Bucky's.
Okay, but you said you saw it in the wild. What does that mean?
Like, instead of hearing you talk about it, I was driving and I looked over and I was like, ah, Bucky's!
Ah, Bucky's! That's one of the locations.
I didn't know it was going to be there, and I felt like I was seeing a celebrity. It's true. I was like, oh, it's the Brad Pitt of auto stores.
There's a ring the bell, by the way, one more time. Get out. Bucky's Auto Service Center, 16 locations. Rachel saw has seen one of them. They've been around for 50 years, and she finally saw one of them. All right, Alexa is now asking you questions. You just say, Alexa, what's the weather? And then she gives you that. Now, if you ask her for something or tell her to do something, if she needs more specifics, she will ask you to sort of follow up on it, and then you realize you're having a conversation with her. But what you're really doing is you're teaching Alexa about the, we're not supposed to stop saying her name because then it messes everybody else up. Alex, you're talking to Alex, and Alex is learning about you.
That's right. This is seen as a kind of a breakthrough, although it's a pretty rudimentary breakthrough. So right now, I have a Google Assistant, and it's infuriating how often you ask a question, and Google, you know, Assistant just says, I don't understand your question, or could you repeat that or something? I mean, it's just there's not much follow-up, and we've now gotten so used to our smart speakers actually being able to give us information that we get impatient when, you know, 5 years ago, none of us would even have expected anybody to even respond mechanically.
Yeah.
The reason this is seen as significant is now sometimes Alexa, Alex, doesn't understand something. Doesn't understand a question, so they've now come up with this second level, which is they can say, so what do you mean by that? Or can you be more specific? Or can you clarify? Like, let's say, and by the way, this is still just it's a few months away, so it's on the horizon, but it isn't available right now. But they say right now it only can deal with, like, other devices. So if it controls your temperature and you'd say, hey, it's a little too hot, can you make it a little cooler? They could then follow up with say, like a temperature. Well, okay, if it's 68 right now and you think it's a little too warm, would you like it at 64 or try it at 62? And the reason this is of some significance, not just this mundane, be more specific, it's that they will then learn your preferences. So if they know that John Curley comes home every day and after a hard day's work at the office, he, you know, plops into his chair with his scotch and says, you know, I'm a little chilly, you know, warm it up. They'll know after trial and error that, when John says that, he really likes it at a nice toasty 73. Mm-hmm. And then they'll always go, when you say, can you make it a little warmer? It'll always go to 73.
Oh.
The idea is that it's learning your preferences. And that's a good thing. In the pre-show meeting, Jacob suggested, so you could say, I feel like reading, so can you give me some, you know, nice reading music? They might say, can you describe what reading music is to you? And you might say, it's instrumental, or it's light jazz, or it's Kenny G or something. Then the next time you say, hey, I feel like I'm in the mood to read or to smoke or drink or something, they would then learn your habits. And that's all well to the good because they're responding to what you want.
But doesn't Alexa normally ask, or Alex normally ask questions? Or watch this.
Alexa, what's the weather like in Cambodia?
Which city in Cambodia?
Like, is that an example of her asking questions?
Well, that's in. Yes, I would think that would be.
Okay, well, that's from December 6, 2018.
Okay.
I thought Cambodia was a city.
This idiot, yeah. What happens when you're dumber than your smart speaker?
I don't know. Well, 608,000 people watched him ask her that. I guess, does
well,
it
that
scare
might have been
you
the developmental age.
Does it scare you now that it's getting AI and the thing now begins to understand you? Or I guess the point that people are like, now it's going to start telling you what you really feel and what you really think. Okay.
Yeah, and that's the great thing about that is the more information it knows to cater to your needs, the more it has to know about you. And at some point, is privacy an issue? And at that point, and then we played out this little sci-fi scenario. So, let's say that you come home and you want to have a drink and you say, I want some light music or something. And they might say, John, I can tell that you've had a hard day at work. I think you need some pump-up music. So I'm going to play you some, I don't know, whatever you would consider, you know, exercise music. Because you look a little down. It's that kind of control when the speakers actually start controlling your mood food and or what they deliver to you that could get a little, could get scary, but it could be even nice.
That would be nice. Great. I would like that.
Yes, there you go. By the way, I feel like a massage.
just a quick thing before we take a break here. Rye just wrote me. I'm concerned. Says Rye writes, what did you say about Home Depot on the radio? Jacob, did I say anything bad about Home Depot on the radio?
I know you talked about him working at Home Depot quite a bit.
But I didn't say anything bad about it. I love Home Depot because I don't want him to lose his job. Because then I wrote him back. I'm texting him now. All good things. Why? And now he's, I see the three dots. God, if he lost his job because of something I said on the radio.
Well, you did.
Really. Did I say something bad?
Well, why would they hire your son who doesn't know squat about...
No, you kept saying that, Tom. You kept saying, well, he doesn't know anything. I'm like, Tom. And then you go, well, maybe his manager... I said, Tom, please stop bringing the manager
up. You're not a ventriloquist, John.
No, you don't. I will. I'm telling you, I am going to blame this on... I'm going to now call you Uncle Tom. I'm going to say, Rye, it was your Uncle Tom did that. He was the one that was questioning why you even have the job in the first place. That's what it was. They're like, well, why the guy hire him? And I'm like, Tom...
Yes.
That's exactly what you said. Now he's not writing anymore. The little dots have gone away. Are you happy? I don't even know he's live anymore. Something heavy's fallen on him, and he's at aisle 11.
He's too good for Home Depot anyway.
Tom, don't say that! Tracy, quick, get us out. Talk about a car accident. Tom, please.